Johnson along the 10-metre line. Now the little chip ahead of Baka Tower. Oh, he's managed to take it. Gets it away to Russell. And Racing have to score. And the race for the final. And Imhoff gets there. Oh, that just might be one of the greatest moments in Racing's history.
The Moog machine cracks into gear one more time. Little by little, over the try line, and there's the score. The dam bursting eventually.
Hello and welcome to episode 7 of the Up and Under podcast brought to you by Rugby Lad. Thanks for tuning in again this week and we hope you've been enjoying the show so far. Once again, we've got another packed show for you again this week. Myself and Jamie are going to look back on the Champions Cup semi-finals and look forward to this weekend's final, as well as looking at the Pro 14 season, which kicks off again on Friday. We also look at the possibility of the four big South African franchises joining the competition. And we chat to Leinster's Stuart Lancaster and Munster's Johan van Gran and Tyburn. Enjoy the show, guys.
Now Mullins, man to spare here. This is Crotty. Oh yes, O'Gara is in! Another lead for Munster, and what a magnificent try! You won't see better. That is sensational. Where did it start? Somewhere around the 22, and they had such momentum going that they just kept it up. There was Horgan, looked as if it was coming to an end with that. Halby waited for it. They all surged up in numbers, and then it seemed to break down again. There was Crotty making that big drive through again, and O'Gara at his shoulder. What a moment. Well, that's his first try, and I hope it won't be his last.
Right, so Jamie, Racing versus Exeter final. Who could have predicted that?
Oh, well, yeah. Shazeem's was straight on to me, And then sure, Stephen Ferris wrote in. Fez wrote in, but I was half tempted to go back at him, but I decided to take the higher ground on it. Yeah, look, as I said to him, I was delighted that they won, but and this will feed into why my when we get to who do we think is going to perform in the final, the result, the side I'm going with, right? But like, not that they were lucky, but Saracens nearly did to them what they did to Leinster. And they weren't far off like doing it. And it took a moment of brilliance that only Russell and Racing can do to unlock it. But, you know, that Saracens negative, not negative, but just the way they play, which is very like claustrophobic, nearly paid off for them again. And that's why it was so hard to see, because they just had the players to do it, very hard for them to see them not doing it. But like, I was delighted because like, it makes for way better viewing. It makes for a really exciting final. Racing are just so dangerous. It does show to what can happen to them if you quieten them down. But you got to be on your money like for the whole 80 minutes, because with Finn Russell there or whoever, you know, they can unlock you with a moment of brilliance.
Yeah, so you look back and like, I mean, they're the masters of playing cup rugby, and that was the epitome of a cup rugby match.
Yeah.
Back and forth, nice and tight, penalty here, penalty there, and it had to be a moment of brilliance. That was the only thing that was going to unlock it, and it was a moment of absolute. The Maverick back again, like with an amazing kick, catch it to Vakatawa. He even did well to take it back inside.
Yeah.
Lovely support line, and there you go. But this was the difference. What they did is, whereas Leinster didn't come back into it late, Saracen's going to bully Racing, but Racing stayed in the game and they kept ticking away. So they were always close, always in the game.
That's, and you just hit it on the head there, and they stayed in the hunt. And look, Leinster nearly pulled it off, okay? They got to back to, what, a 4 or 5 point game?
Yeah.
But they just left it too far. Like they left, it was 22-3 or something at halftime. That's huge. But Racing, they just, you know, they stayed there. You know, they just kept in the hunt. And that's what you got to do, because all you need is one moment. Because I don't think, this might be harsh, but I don't think Saracens are the most inventive of play. They're quite direct, and they have big runners, and they get the offloads that way. And then when you have Farrell in the background, and you have those runners giving you momentum, yeah, they can orchestrate a couple of things. But I don't think they can unlock you like Russell can. You know what I mean? So yeah, I completely agree with you. They stayed in. They this is not take away from Saracens. They executed their game plan actually pretty well. But Racing were patient and stayed in it and didn't make the mistakes and didn't force it too much and stayed in the fight and just waited for their moment. And when they got it, they took it.
Yeah. How good was Unakaroin?
Ah, the skin. Skin Ryan, like we're the same age. And I played age grade at Dunica all the way up. And I was delighted for him. I was gutted that he left, right? But he did, knowing him and talking to him, he did the right thing for him at that moment in time. And he looked at it from the business perspective, which is very, very important. And he made the right decision for him for the long term. He's still like, if he was in Ireland, would he be getting the nod? I don't know. I don't think so. Right. But just, and that's not a reflection of him as a player, but I just the way it was going, I think that was the trend, the headwinds against him. I think he made the right decision. He's shown that. You talk to anyone in Racing, the organization really, really like him, appreciate him, and for all the work that he does behind the scene that is reflected on the pitch. And on the pitch, we saw him, you know, we saw his leadership. We saw him having little words to lads. We saw him having a little word to Nigel Owens, you know, and we saw his commanding presence in terms of his energy. He was running around there like a lunatic, you know what I mean? And he was getting through huge work, and his tactical awareness, like especially the line out negating that, he showed a lot of energy. And I know that because in the behind the scenes, unbelievable pro. Works really hard. You just have to look at Zeebo. Zeebo's always taking the mick out of him in training, but it's always Dunica is doing something. He's stretching, he's doing rehab, he's doing something. Zeeb's just is dancing half the time, but look, each to their own, right? But but like, you know what I mean? He's leading by example, you know? And you know, it's great to see him and Zeebs make the decision, a brave decision. And now they're in a European Cup final, and you know, they potentially might have a medal around their neck come whatever it is, a couple of weeks time.
Yeah, no, you'd love to see him win it. You really would. Like, and I said, it's great to see him, like, especially a guy like him in the twilight of his career who had all those problems with injury.
This is the thing; he's not in his twilight, right? I think he's playing better than ever.
Yeah. Well, technically speaking.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. But like But I don't think that's as big a talking point in French rugby as it is in our rugby here.
Yeah,
that's just I don't know. It's just an observation. It'd be interesting. What do you think?
Well, I suppose they're better managed now, I suppose, these days. I think players can and will be able to live longer careers because of the sports science officer. And as you're saying, with the French rugby, the way it works, he probably doesn't play as much games over there. He doesn't have to kind of build himself up as much. He's not playing international rugby as well, which gives him more, which will add to his career as well, like, you know, because he was off for the last 3 or 4 years.
That's huge. And it'd be really interesting to see what happens. Like, you know, if we don't start getting people at crowds here, you know, Irish rugby would be under pressure, you know. You're already hearing conversations, like, you know, you're hearing conversations with Rob Kearney. You know, he's kicking on to another place now, apparently. You know, it strikes a point that, like, maybe guys might start to think about going as early as Zeebs and Dunica did. You know what I mean? To think, actually, you know what? Yeah, this actually might be the route for me to go here to get, instead of 2 or 3 years of playing in Ireland, I might actually end up getting 4, 5, 6 years somewhere else.
Well, think about it this way. In 12 months' time or whatever, at the end of the season, when the contract offers come back, do you think they're going to be anywhere near what they should be before the pandemic? So it's going to be very interesting. They've already taken a cut. What are the offers going to be like come next May? Like, I'd say they're going to be quite low.
Like, you've no choice in the matter. You know what I mean? And it's not like you're reducing down. You know, it's not like you take 20% pay cut. It's not like you're taking one less day at work, or you're approaching it with 20% less intensity. But look, that, you know, there's all sorts of things going on there that, like, I mean, they do have to think of the bigger picture in terms of the being a profession. But look, that's another, that's you and me going on another tangent, right?
There is a lot of people don't understand, like, obviously, like, at the elite level, when you get to international level, and you get, like, you know, there's good money in it, but people forget, like, those kind of middle-of-the-road guys and below, like, it's not massive money, and it's a short career. So people think automatically, oh, if you're a professional player, you're automatically loaded. It doesn't work that way at all. There's only just a small percentage that reach a high level and make good money, but a lot of them are kind of, you know, it's grand making, you're making more money than what another person might, but your career only goes on for 10 years or whatever it is.
Well, the average in Ireland, I think, is 7 now, isn't it? There's limited time to capture value, right? But look, this is not a time to be talking about capturing value or not. This is a time of surviving, you know, and trying to survive as a sport. So look, that's for a different conversation. But come back to the game, though. I wanted to highlight two other Irish lads. And this is a nice segue into the Exeter game, is Whitten and Steenson. You know what I mean? And it again, it's just come back to that point of guys just, it's great to see Irish guys in the final, right? Mm. And it's great to see that there is other opportunity for people to, for you to be successful, whatever it is, you know what I mean? So it's great to see them all in coming into the final.
Yeah. Well, I've had this conversation just on that for a second. I've had this conversation with people for years and years and years. People forget, like, Ireland is, relatively speaking, is a small island with a small playing pool of rugby players. But yeah, in Munster and Leinster over the last few years, it's got two of the best clubs in the world. And then the likes of Connacht and Ulster, two very, very high quality teams. If you don't make it with Leinster, or you don't make it with Munster, or you don't make it with someone else, it doesn't necessarily mean you're a bad rugby player. You can go abroad, you can have a very successful career elsewhere. Very successful. With another very good team.
100%. Like, half the trick that the clubs, like, it's a really good lore, you know, to stick with your province.
Yeah. There's only four of them. Do you know what I mean? In the whole country, do you know, there's only four professional teams. Like, it's not a lot.
No, but then, like, I still don't know if we should lean into that policy of that you don't pick players if they're not in Ireland. I don't know if we have the volume of players to be able to do that. Because take Gareth Steenson, right? I play Gareth Steenson under 20s. We get to World Cup final. He's the 10. Okay, how he never really got a go here in Ireland. And had to go to Exeter and had an unbelievable career in Exeter and has never been capped.
It's strange. Just at the time, there might have been one or two fellas ahead of him in that position. And that's just the way it works. At times, you have too much stock in one position and one really talented guy ends up losing out.
The minute, like, for a while there, if you remember back to the Geordie Murphy days or when Owen Redden was in Wasps, they still brought guys back. Or Duffy was in Harlequins, I think, at the time. Right? They brought, but for some reason, there was a point where they just stopped that. And... Yeah.
It was around the time kind of with Sexton and stuff, like, and then they kept picking in, but then they were like, okay, we don't want to repeat this. So they tried to stop people from leaving around the time of Sexton leaving and coming back. I think that's what it was. And they're like, look, let's try and make these fellas not leave.
I don't know. I'm still undecided on if that policy will work out for us in the long run or not.
We might have to change, you know, in the back of the pandemic, definitely. Things are going to have to, so you don't know. But what do you think of the Exeter to lose match anyway? Like, I mean, it's a good match, a bit more entertaining the other match, but in the end, like, any time Exeter got on to that 22, they took their chances. They deserved it.
Yeah, I think Exeter just broke them down, didn't they? Like, particularly the two Simmons brothers. Like, they were the main go forward for Exeter.
I'd love to get your thoughts on Simmons, actually, like, from a number eight. Like, I mean, I think he's completely underrated. I can understand why he's not in the England squad, because he was given a chance. I think he's absolutely class. I think he has everything.
Him and what's the Harlequins eight?
Dombrandt.
I think I think two of them are really good footballers. You know what I mean? A bit underrated, and they've got a lot of size. Like, you know what I mean? Particularly your man Dombrandt. He's a big boy. And I just love his story, you know what I mean? Like, he was kind of picked up in uni, you know, a bit of a late bloomer, for want of a better word. But, like, what do I think? I think Exeter are, like, this is going to sound, I don't know if they'll like this. They're almost a little bit of an evolution of Sarri's, right? So What do I mean by that? I mean, they've got a lot of really good structure, right, to their game. They've got a really good upfront game that they can show with their pack, which they showed at the weekend, you know, if you want to get tight. But they do have the players and the ability to play a little bit more, I think, than a Saracens. I always prefer watching Exeter play. And I actually think that might potentially give them the edge. Now, Zeebo will love this because he literally was like, please say Exeter are your favourite so that we can win again. but look, it's a tight game, but I think it's slightly in Exeter's favour given the fact that they can be patient and grind it out, but I think they have the ability to unlock a team like Racing as well for a try. But it's like a one score game between two of them. Like, it's a toss of a coin.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good final. I think it's a good match. But I think it'll be very kind of like, I mean, I don't think anyone will be able to predict who's going to win this weekend, which is what you want to see in a final.
Exactly. And you know what? I had a quick look at the bookies and I was like, how are the bookies calling this? Because like, where my head is at is like, it's kind of like a toss of a coin, maybe leaning towards Exeter because of they just have a bit more structure to the game, I think. Now, I could be wrong, you know what I mean? But like, that's just the way it strikes me. And I looked at it and it was like, I think like some have it -5, you know, have 5 points between them. Some have it 4, some have it 3. You know, so in Exeter's favor. So like, it's nothing. In a final, that's nothing. That's nothing. That's literally like, that's one moment. But then this is where my head goes. If ever there was a team that just needs one moment, though,
it's Racing. And they have that structure more than most French teams. Do you know what I mean? Like, whereas Toulouse or like Canoe have DuPont and Colby and stuff to do anything, but they're lacking that little bit of structure, whereas Racing have it. Not as structured as Exeter. They're as structured as you can get for a French team, put it that way. And I mean that as a compliment.
Yeah, and look, they've been, whenever I've been looking at Europe, they've been my kind of outside punt or dark horse to look out for, you know. But you know what's great? It's great that we have two new finalists, or like two people who haven't won it, which I think is great. But yeah, I in a really weird way, I'm leaning slightly towards Exeter. Zeebo, you'll be welcome. But Fez, I don't care. No, I'm only messing, Baz. Yeah, that's kind of, I don't know, where is your head at with it?
I'm leaning slightly towards Racing. I think it'd be a very evening match game.
Here's the question. Who would you prefer? I would prefer Racing to win.
I'd prefer Racing to win 100% just because of, obviously, you want the three Irish guys to do well, and that's just, you know, that's natural. But at the same time, if it was any other team, I'd like Exeter to win. Because I like the way they play. I told you before, I think they're very similar. I love their story, coming from the Championship, coming up, winning the league. They're similar to Munster in the way how passionate their fans are and stuff. But, do you know what I mean? Like, do it for Skin and Zeebs. Do you know what I mean? But, no, look, it'll go either way, but hopefully Racing.
I think actually it'd be, look, I'd love Racing to do it. I think they play the best brand of rugby. It's the most exciting, most entertaining. I think for European Championship in general, I think it would be fantastic for a French team to win it. So I don't know, that's
front rows on the two captains, please.
We will listen to Nigel.
You have to.
You're quite right, you do.
You don't like the scrimmage? But if you don't, you're in the wrong position. Now I'm telling you this. If you're not going down, you're standing up. The next ones I feel is causing the problems, you are going to go for 10 minutes. You're all been at fault and you've had all on your final warning. Is that clear? Yeah. Get on with it, please.
If you don't like scrimmaging, you're in the wrong position.
Yes.
Just, I wish it was a quote book.
Who's it does now?
For Nigel Owens.
Right, so Pro 14 is back this weekend, but before we get on to the actual, before we look at a few matches, they made an announcement with their fixtures, Monday Night Rugby. What do you think of that? Good idea.
There's nothing wrong with it. I mean, going to a game at 7:30, there's no big deal to it, right? It'd be 7:30 kickoff. Perfect. I think it's great. I just hope that their long-term vision isn't to package this up and sell it onto another provider. So then you'll have God only knows how many broadcasters and what channels. Oh. Like we talked about that before, right?
Just annoy me. But it's the air contract now is up at the end of this season now. So would they really have to sort something out
they do.
Going forward and figure out what to do?
But I like what they're trying to do here. They are trying to make it an event. They are trying to clean it up, I suppose. I still think it'd be really smart decision to have all the games played at the same time on a Saturday and on a Sunday, or on one day you have, like the NFL, you have two rounds of games, and then you have Monday night football. You know, you have Monday night rugby, and then maybe you do. Then maybe there's one Friday night game somewhere. You know what I mean? And so then you get a bit of a, you know, it's a different offering, and you know, there's like a big game, one big game on a Monday night that you'll get good TV view. You can do the same on a Friday night, or you can go to it, and then Saturday, like, you know, whatever, 1 o'clock, 5 o'clock, two games, boom, no matter where they are. Yeah, that's, I don't know. I think it's a good step. And you're right. Best time, what have they to lose trying it now?
Yeah, exactly.
Who are you competing with on a Monday night on TV in general?
Obviously the Monday night football, but you're either it depends on what spot's on. But if you're a rugby fan, there's no other rugby you're going to watch it. Mm. Everyone's going to watch it for the sake of it. But I saw there as well, so obviously it looks like the Kings are going to be finished and they won't be back at all. But now they're saying, they've already said they're in talks, but it looks like now with next year, the King's gone, Cheetah's gone, and the four big boys brought in. Will that work? Or are we reaching again? Or could that be finally the ticket? The Lions, the Sharks, the Stormers, the Bulls.
I'm not surprised. I think the other two teams will end up being almost like in their equivalent A League, or playing in the Currie Cup, and act as feeders and development grounds. You know, I think this is probably part of always the macro plan is let's see if this whole, you know, idea of playing and having the South African teams in this works. Okay. It does.
Then get the big boys weight. They were always the test.
Yeah. Look, let's be honest. The Super Rugby is all over the place, right? It's prior to COVID. You were having teams playing in Argentina. You're playing across, four different continents? Is that right? Five?
It's mad.
Three or four different continents? Depending on how you break up Australia and Japan, you know, Southeast Asia and all that. I'm going to get absolute abuse for my geography there. But I think this is better for everyone. Have you been to South Africa?
No, I haven't been to South Africa, no.
It's an easy, 11, 12-hour flight from London. Or if you're flying from Dublin, you fly through Addis Ababa in Ethiopia. It's really easy to do, right?
Same time zone as well, so there's no jet lag and all that.
What is it, 2-3 hours? Something like that? It's nothing. And I think it'd be great going down there to play rugby, particularly in November, December, January, February time. You know what I mean?
The only thing that scares me is when you look back years and years ago, the old Super 12, Super 14, Super 15 was absolutely class.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they started bringing in extra continents and extra teams, and they just thought more will make this better. And then they brought in the conferences, and they ended up being a Super 18 at one stage. And they're back to Super 15. They'll probably end up being back Super 12s again. But Pro 14 now is going from Pro 12. Pro 2 was Pro 10. Then it was Pro 12. Then it's Pro 14. Now we've got conferences. I don't like conferences.
I lean the other way.
Yeah, I don't like them at all. I prefer one big league.
But I'm like...
let them all battle it out.
No, I prefer the conference... The minute they had semi-final, I think conference works. If you wanted a straight shootout, like the Premiership in soccer, yeah, great. Like the old Celtic League, fantastic, right? Okay, I think the conference is the best model for... It gives the league the most opportunity to grow and bring in new markets. Because you got to think, in terms of rugby, we're positioned really, really well here for the American market if they ever want to come into it, right? Because the time difference isn't okay. West Coast is, but
a New York team or something like that.
Yeah, would work. But sorry, come back to the point. I like the conference. I think it works well. I think it gives the opportunity. Look, I think like American football, it's good to always have those like derby type scenarios and always have them in each market, because I think it's very important for each market to have them. But then having, I don't think you should be playing at 18, for example, I don't think they should be playing every team at least once in the season. You know what I mean? I think that maybe sometimes you just don't end up playing guys. But that will bring a bit of like uniqueness when you do play them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like the way, like I say, Leinster are playing English team, like, but they don't often play them. They might play them every 2 years, and then you're more built up to watch that match because you haven't seen them play Saracens or Exeter or something in a couple of years.
Yeah. And then you get your regulars as well off the derbies and stuff like that. So, and then if you can do it off seeding or ranking, I don't know. But it'd be really interesting to see, because I don't think they qualify for Europe then off the back of it, do they?
I don't think. Well, no. But that was it. The initial plan was no, but that's these teams now are a completely different standard to the other two teams. So like they're going to expect it, I think, because they're proper. Like these are big. The Bulls, Sharks, like they've bought one the Super Rugby. Like I mean, tell you what, the Lions have got how many finals? Like they're big teams.
I tell you what, imagine, like, okay, I don't know if you'll be able to imagine this, but Leinster versus Bulls in Pretoria, like that would be whopper.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, but people are forgetting that these are serious teams. This is like before, and this is no offense. It's like if you're a Super Rugby team and you brought Treviso and Dragons over for a couple of seasons. And they're like, oh yeah, they were good, they were decent. But imagine bringing Leinster and Munster over. That's the equivalent of bringing these lads over compared to the other South. And it's no insult to the other South African teams. They're completely less standard to the teams that are looking at now at the moment. They're proper franchises. Look,
so in general, I think it's great. I think I'm really excited about it. I think it's the best thing for the game. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing him get involved and expose. The other thing as well is like exposes us to other ways of playing, and
yeah,
like they're not going to be small teams. So remember we were talking previously about we're not a big nation as such. So it exposes more to playing against these big teams,
physical sides. Yeah, yeah.
And you know, if I'm being selfish, then that would be great for Ireland to think about. Okay, how do we adapt to these guys? You know, these are basically, this is going to be where most of the World Cup winners are playing. Obviously, I'm not too sure, you'll have to check this for me, but it'd be great if they are playing in Europe or will eventually be playing in Europe.
You'd imagine so. That was the plan originally with the other teams, that they kind of, it was kind of a little in small writing for now, they won't be in Europe, but there is always plans and talks going forward. So I would say if it goes down the route of the Cheetahs and the Kings are gone, those four teams will not come over here without at least the possibility of Europe within, I would say, maybe two seasons. So then you have to figure out, like, do you make Europe bigger? Like maybe that's why, maybe not, but like they're going to try like this year 24 teams instead of 20 because they have to over the pandemic. So they'll find out this year if 24 can work. If not, it'll make the Pro 14 better because there's going to be more teams competing for less positions for Europe. So you can't just rest, like, no, point will say Leinster. People always give out, oh, you're resting Johnny Sexton or you're resting this fella. There might not be relegation, but if you don't finish a certain position, you won't get into Europe. So that's another, there's something for them to play for going forward, like, because, you know, like, a team like Munster or something like that could easily not make Europe if they have a bad
If we do the conference way, you'll get less games with higher quality. And I think that's the real key here for fans. So the fans want high quality games. They don't want dud games. And having this conference, having these better teams in will, I think, help elevate that. The more and more I talk about it, the more and more I get excited about it.
It's better.
Yeah.
It's better.
Yeah.
Because like, that's the issue this weekend. You know, you're saying dud games. Like, so like, we're looking back at the fixtures for this weekend. So Leinster and Dragons on Friday. I mean, like
Leinster
at the RDS. There's only one way that's going to go. Like, and it's no insult to the Dragon stuff. Like, it's just the disparity there between those two teams is absolutely.
There's going to be a 3-4 tries difference there in those two teams.
Yeah, with probably like your B and a half team, C team outlook. Do you know? And that's just straight facts. Do you know? And it's not. We're not trying to put the Dragons down. Next up, Ulster Treviso on Friday. That's only going to go one way. Like, there's no way in hell, like, one in a million is there going to be an upset. Do you know? Whereas at least in other leagues, a Worcester might turn over our Saracens.
Yeah.
Are Treviso going to turn over Ulster? No way. Then you've got Scarlets and Munster. Yeah, nice, good.
That's a toss of a coin. Yeah,
that's a good even match game. And then you've got Connacht and Glasgow. But out of the four Irish provinces, two of those games, you might as well come back to me on Monday and I'd not look up the results and go, oh, well, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's just, that's unfortunate because there's actually more of those in the Pro 14 than you think once you add it all up. And that's the issue we have there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of those games every week where you can just literally go, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And bringing those guys in will make a big change up to that. And particularly if they knock that on into Europe, that they all have access to Europe if they qualify.
Yeah, make it harder. So how brilliant it is in football, like when you have that battle for Champions League spots.
Yeah.
Because there's so many good teams now, like in the Premiership, that are battling for four spots. And if you made it harder to get into Europe from the Pro 14, so at the end of the season, you've got, we'll say, a Munster, a Bulls, and an Edinburgh battling for one spot into the Champions Cup. The difference that'll make is huge.
Yeah. And you know, I'd really like the ideal scenario is that then, okay, we talked about picking players that are playing abroad. Imagine they just opened it up to then, okay, we'll pick you if you're playing in the Pro 14.
Yes. That makes sense. And then you can go to Scotland, Wales,
South Africa,
whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
Jesus, that's not bad at all. Like, imagine like sending some of our forwards over for a couple of seasons and with the Bulls or with the Chicolets. Imagine sending someone like James Ryan for a couple of years over with the Bulls, like, and he comes back then and he's Ibanez a bit. Do you know what I mean?
But think about it. Like, I mean, we're starting to get a good few second rows. We have a back row backlog. Okay. Excuse all puns there. We potentially might have a bottlenecks at 9 and 10, which might be a good headache actually to have. But, you know, every so often we get different bottlenecks in different areas. And yeah, we can try and move them around in Ireland. And we sometimes do that. But why don't we try and expand that net a little bit more? And maybe that Pro 14 model is the way to go, or Pro 18, whatever the hell it's going to be called. Right. Maybe that's the way to go. And you know, again, I think, Jason, you and I have solved another world rugby problem.
Here's O'Gara. Two locks, the two lions chasing, and Chevelle got it, and he was put backwards in a big way. Oh, what a drive from Munster. That was Chevelle and Sale that they were carting back.
Stay back.
O'Connell is central to this team. In he goes. First, and then O'Callaghan and the rest. Chevelle is facing the might of an Irish province and even the beast from France.
Next up, we hear from Leinster's Stuart Lancaster and Munster's Johan van Gran and Ty Byrne ahead of the new Pro 14 season. Stuart, we've seen a lot of talk in recent weeks about the power game in Irish rugby and how English teams always seem to be getting the upper hand there. Is that something we should be concerned about going forward?
I think it's probably too simplistic to say that personally. It wasn't that long ago Ireland were winning Grand Slams. We won the the European Cup 2 years ago. The reality is, yeah, we've lost against Saracens twice now, and Ireland lost against England twice. I think the game in Newcastle was nip and tuck. I really think that. You know, we were 10-3 up going into half time. Obviously, they got that try just on half time. We definitely had opportunities at the start of the second half. And it was only when we lost Scott Flady to the bin, really, that they got the momentum in the game, and it gave us too much to do with the short time left on the clock. So, this game was different, I think. This Leinster game, it's not. I mean, in 4 years I've been at Leinster, I've not seen us concede as many scrum penalties in any game. I don't worry about things like that because I know we can fix those things up technically. Perhaps one or two things didn't go away that we felt should have done, but that's rugby, I guess. I think going on to the Ireland games and the England games that are coming around the corner, Ireland got more than enough in their armoury to challenge England. I think it was probably more the kicking game, actually, in the last game, England-Ireland, that resulted in England getting that win. But the reality is, whether you're playing Saracens or England or the big teams, you know, in Europe, you have to do the fundamentals really well. And on the day, you know, we didn't do that well enough, and that was the reason Saracens won.
Stuart, do you think there's a bit of a gap opening up between Pro 14 teams and the latter stages of the Champions Cup in terms of preparation?
It's probably easy to say that because there was no Pro 14 teams in the final four of the European Cup this time round. But last time round and the time before, it was a different story, wasn't it? You know, there were Pro 14s. So in this particular year, you know, ourselves, obviously, Ulster, didn't make it through from the quarterfinals. But I still think on the day, you know, if you put, you know, a top Scarlets team out, a top Glasgow team out, a top Leinster team out, a top Munster team out, a top Ulster team out, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you've got some seriously good teams who I think can compete at the highest level. It just happens that this year it wasn't the case, but I don't think, you know, if that had been happening for the last 4 or 5 years, then you'd probably say yes. But on this particular year, you know, it's a French-English final. But we still feel, and I think our record shows, you know, we won 6 from 6 in our pool. We've scored 29 tries in our pool, which is the highest in any pool. The previous year, I think we scored 27 tries, which was the highest. The year before that, we scored 22 tries, which was the highest. The year before that, we scored 31 tries, which was the highest. So I think we're there or thereabouts. But as we've just discussed, you have to deliver on the day. So on this particular day, we didn't deliver. But I still think it'd be too early to write off teams from the Pro 14.
Stuart, just staying on the Pro 14. Last season, people were saying it was too easy going into the Europe. And now this season, they're saying it's not adequate preparation. So what's your take on it?
Yeah, I think I've come back to the point. I think the top end of the Pro 14 is very competitive. You know, for ourselves personally, it's a real challenge for us, you know, because we lose. If you go through this season, the Pro 14 season, you know, which we managed to achieve a success unbeaten. We did that during a World Cup year and a Six Nations period where we lost 9, 15, 16, 17 players. Now, you could say that that's because maybe other teams aren't strong, but I would argue that, you know, I'd say that's, we've got good strength in depth and we look to develop that talent from within as well. So, you know, I think if there is scope for development of the Pro 14 and you know, obviously there's talk at the moment of potentially 4 South African sides coming, I think that would be a positive, personally. I think that would add to the challenge, which I think it would be a good thing. And again, I think, you know, without going too much into the evolution of, you know, club rugby in the world, I think it would be a good thing really for us.
Johan, a strange pre-season, if you want to call it that. A few weeks ago you were in a Pro 14 semi-final. Now all of a sudden you're getting ready for a new season. How has preparation gone the last few weeks? Is it a matter of going hard, or is it a matter of holding guys back and managing them, knowing that you've got a big block of games coming up over the next few weeks and months?
Oh, Jason, I think it was about balance. We trained the week after the Pro 14 semi-final. Then most of the squad took a week's break. Some lads played in the A fixture away to Connacht. Some lads went away. The bulk of the squad came back. We handled last week as a pre-season week. Played with 37 guys against Connacht at Thoman Park, and you know, we are now looking forward to the start of a new season. So definitely strange times, but you know, we're comfortable with the preparation that we've had.
What are Munster's goals for this season, Johan? Is it about getting past that elusive semi-final, or is it just about improving on last season and seeing where you end up?
Yeah, I think from a league point of view, all teams are back to 0 points. So in order to get yourself in the playoff games, you've got to consistently perform week in and week out. And you've got to put yourself in a position to get into a semi-final, which we've done for the last 4 seasons, and then, you know, hopefully improve as the season goes to get a positive result in a semi-final and get into a final. But that's a very long way away. You know, it's a few different blocks coming up. We've got 2 weeks with the whole squad, then a whole host of players will go to the national team. You know, the bulk of our squad will remain behind, and guys come back on the Monday before the Champions Cup, and then you've got 2 Champions Cup games, 3 Interpros, 2 more Champions Cup games, and then you know, there's a Six Nations with some Pro 14 games, and you know, then you're into April. So such a long way to go. So we'll just start with the first week.
And just finally on the injury front, Johan, obviously we know RG Snyman is going to be out for a long time, but have you any update on Joey Carberry, Conor Murray and Dave Kilcoyne?
No, Joey will be the same for a number of weeks and months, so he's doing very well, but no update on the injury. Conor's progressing well. Hopefully he might be available for selection next week, but don't want to speculate on that. Nice to have Andrew Conway back and Dan Goggin back. Dave Kilcoyne progressing well. There's an outside chance that it'll be ready for next weekend. And also a fair bit of experience play at season internationals. Not available, but you're going to get that through the season. So, you know, very excited with the players we have available for the weekend against the Scarlets.
Tig, where do you think Munster need to improve heading into the new season?
I suppose, like, there's a lot of areas you're always looking to improve in most areas. I think overall last season we probably looked at ourselves and we know we can be a bit more clinical. You know, looking back at the semi-final, at times, you know, our line-out just didn't... We lost a few line-outs at crucial moments. So, you know, it's those small moments in games that if we can turn them around and win those moments, then results will definitely start to come our way for sure.
Is there a sense of frustration in Munster at the moment over the last few seasons with your disappointments, or are you coming back into this new campaign with a renewed vigour?
There's always going to be frustration, of course. Everyone wants to win silverware, and you know, I came from a season, my last season in Scarlets, I lost semi-final and final, and then to come here and lose another few semi-finals, it is quite frustrating. But you know, each year everyone starts on zero, as they say in the league, and there's another opportunity to win, so there's excitement too. And you know, since I've come here, I can feel the development of the squad, and I feel like the way things are coming together, they're getting better and better. And we're certainly on, we're close, and I feel that. And I think hopefully all going well, we'll be in the same situation next year, come May and June, and we'll actually go that one step further this time.
Just on a personal note, Tig, were you happy with your own performances when you came back, having been out injured for so long?
I still don't feel like I'm there yet. I think it does take time. I think, you know, the Connacht game was a bit of a strange one in terms of they had 2 red cards, and it was a bit of an open game. And, you know, I do enjoy those open games a bit more, so can play a bit. But, you know, then got into Leinster, I probably didn't feel as fit afterwards game. Like, looking back at my performance, I do feel like I'm not there yet. And again, we play Connacht on the weekend. I feel like I've taken another step forward. So all going well this week. I think my fitness is slowly almost at match fitness now, which is good.
I know it's going to be another few months or even longer than that before we see fans back in stadiums, Tig, but it must be exciting that you're only a few weeks away from finally getting back to playing a competitive game in Tomer Park. Another step towards normality, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. Like, we played there on the weekend, and it was special even then. I know there's no crowds there, but even just getting to walk out onto the pitch, it still gives you that feeling. And looking forward to actually playing a competitive game there and getting back into it. And please God, some fans will slowly start integrating into the stadium soon, and we can start getting that buzz around the place again.
Thanks, Tyke. That's it for this week's show, guys. Once again, if you do get an opportunity, please do go on and subscribe to us on whichever podcast platform you're using, and please give us a rating on the store too. Enjoy this weekend's games, guys, and stay safe. Thanks.